Welcome, everybody, to November's finance meeting. We'll call this to order. We're actually about 5 minutes late. I think we're missing some people, but we're going to get started. Approval of tonight's agenda by Mr. Denisha and Ms. Curran. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Approval of the minutes for October 28th. Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Arquette. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion carried. So first up, we have an environmental property cleanup presentation. And I'd like to welcome Gary Bowich of Bowich and Coffee, Stephen Button, of course, Renee, Mr. Young from New York DEC, Matthew Duffany. Is that the proper, is it Duffany? Okay. So welcome aboard, and we'll start your presentation.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to listen to what we have to present to you. As I know, most of you are aware, this has been a few years in the making, but in honor of having hit our 50th property that is either pending or has been cleaned up, we're actually at number 52 on the pending list, we are wanting to take an opportunity to sort of tell everyone about what we've been doing, how we've been doing it, the collaborative process we've been engaged in, and really take an opportunity to mark what I consider to be a milestone occasion for both the county and for the DEC collectively, who have been our partners in this process. I'm sure you'll recognize many of the faces that are in front of you. Renee Cole, our county treasurer. Obviously, you know who I am. Gary Bowich, our outside environmental counsel from the law firm of Bowich and Coffee, and Matt Duffany, who is the senior spill engineer over at Region 6. I would be remiss if I did not identify that our commissioner for Region 6 from DEC, Randy Young, is present, as is Andrea Pedrick from the DEC. We're going to take turns in presenting tonight. I'll sort of moderate, but we're going to kick off with Renee, who's going to give you a little bit of history associated with how we get through the tax foreclosing process. As the chief tax enforcing officer under Article 9 and Article 11 of the Real Property Tax Law, it's her responsibility to collect the taxes, pull them together, and identify which properties may in fact be delinquent and subject to foreclosure. As the chief tax legal enforcing officer, it's my job to take the direction that she provides to me to move forward with foreclosing. Specifically under county law section 500 and 501, I'm also entrusted with the responsibility of representing any department head in any litigation where that department head receives compensation from the annual appropriations, which the county treasurer does in fact receive compensation through the appropriation. So with that, I'll turn it over to Renee, and she can go ahead and give some explanations tonight.
Okay. So I thought when we talked about it, we thought we would start with talking about our office, our role in this, in the whole process, because a lot of it really starts there. It starts through the tax collection process, so I'll do this very quickly. The tax collection process: the Real Property Office mails village taxes in June. Unpaid village taxes are returned to the Treasurer's Office in October and collected here through November. I have a chart for that. So this chart illustrates village taxes that were returned to our office unpaid for 2017, 2018, and 19. You can see it's about $1.2 million a year that is turned over to the county. Unpaid balances are re-levied onto the next town and county bill. So we will continue to collect on this, but we eventually re-levy these onto the next year's taxes. School taxes are mailed by the Real Property Office in September. Unpaid school taxes are returned to the Treasurer's Office on or about November 1st. The second chart is school taxes returned for the same time period, 17, 18, and 19. So these are turned over to the county. They run about $9.5 to $10 million a year. When they're turned over to us, we collect the month of November, and any unpaid balances at that time are re-levied onto the next town and county tax bill. The county sends checks to the school districts to make them whole, and I don't think I mentioned that above. When we identified the re-levy amount, the villages are made whole for the amounts that were on the first slide. Or not on the first slide, I have one coming up for that, sorry. Over 67,000 town and county tax bills are mailed in January. These include any re-levied amounts mentioned above for the schools and the villages that were uncollected as of that time. I have a chart for that. It's chart 3 that actually shows, this has 2 years worth, that's all we could really fit in, but I thought it'd be good for a side by side. The first two columns are 17 and 18 school and village, and the third column totals them. So the total that was re-levied on the 2018 town and county tax bills was almost $7.5 million. And for the 18 and 19 tax bills, it was about $6.3 million that was re-levied. So at that point, they're on your town and county tax bills, but we've made the villages and the schools whole. Unpaid taxes that are returned to the county in June for delinquent tax collection, I should say unpaid taxes are then returned to the county in June for delinquent tax collection, and the county again makes the municipality whole, which is our fourth chart. This represents the 17, 18, and 19 amount of just strictly town taxes that were returned unpaid that we made the towns whole for. So the county's responsible for the collection of all of these unpaid, which leads us to the foreclosure process. And I have a timeline of that. I'll pick up where the town bills are sent out. January 1st of 2000, and I'm using the 2018 tax year for this timeline because it's an ongoing process every year. 2018 tax bills are sent out on January 1st. These include the re-levied village and school from the prior year. November of 2018, 11 months later, a list pendens is filed with the county clerk. In June of 2019, a foreclosure fee is charged. This would be on the unpaid 2018 January bills. So it's a long process. We're just trying to illustrate that. Prior to mid-October of 2019, all potential foreclosure parcels have been pulled and researched by the title searchers and the treasurer's office and turned over to the county attorney's office. In November of 2019, the county attorney's office sends final notice and petition, and foreclosure advertisement is published. The following April, which would be April 2020, next April, that is the last statutory date of redemption per Article 11 of New York State Real Property Tax Law. And it's at that point, after that, that several municipalities, even some counties I know, actually hold their foreclosure auction much earlier than we do. After this April 1st date, we start the inspection process. The foreclosure team consists of staff from the treasurer's office, the real property office, and the county attorney's office. And this is when potential contaminated parcels are identified and tagged for further review. Sometimes some of them are actually identified earlier when the stub searches are done, but until it actually moves past the April 1st date, we don't do anything with them. June and July of 2020, the county court judge signs the order of foreclosure. August 13th of 2020 will be our last date of redemption per our local law. And on September 12th, we will hold the tax foreclosure auction.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
So I think, as Renee pointed out, a lot goes into the process associated with the foreclosure. It's not something that occurs just overnight. And I think, as Renee also pointed out, it's sort of a running process. While we may be looking at certain properties in April with respect to tax foreclosure, that doesn't mean we haven't taken a look the prior April and the April before that and kept a running tally of what types of potential contaminated or potential properties that expose us to liability might exist. This is a fairly novel idea within our county. Starting back roughly around 2007, 2008, there was an idea that was developed in the county to start looking at some of these properties as potential problems and to try to find solutions. For years and years and years, many of these properties that were identified to pose a potential liability had just been left dormant. In fact, at one point during my time as county attorney, we tackled a property that had been lying dormant essentially since 1996. It had been exposed, had a great deal of potential liability, but we would not take title to it under the prior setup because we did not want to essentially take over the liability that was included with the property, whether it had been contaminated or under other issues. That property ran up a tax bill with interest, penalties, and fees included that exceeded $800,000. It was a fairly significant problem for us. Starting in 2011, the county actually brought in an expert to assist us, although he wouldn't claim expertise himself. Gary Bowich was able to try to help us identify some properties and how we could potentially resolve these issues. Initially, he was brought in associated with the J&L property and with the GM property in Messina. But his work slowly started to evolve such that he was able to help with some of the smaller properties, properties that a lot of people took for granted, gas stations in the heart of communities, potential old car dealerships, or potential paint locations that might have used petroleum-based paints. With Gary's assistance, a team was developed that would start to analyze these properties, as Renee pointed out, in April. That team consisted of members from Real Property. Specifically on the team right now is Mike Pearson, although Bruce manages to hop in every once in a while, and we're thankful for his assistance. We also have from the Treasurer's Office, Renee, Vicki Stiles, who is her deputy, Emily Wilson, who is also here with us this evening. And before Emily Wilson, I would be remiss if I did not mention Sandy Bartlett, who spent years and years and years helping the county with our endeavors in the tax foreclosure process. From my office, we've had Deb Snell, who has been working on this project now since its inception. She has been really engaged and a real help, not only to the county attorney's office, but I think Gary Bowich will attest she's a real help to him on a daily basis as well. And we've also, in the past few years, added Heidi Ames from the planning department to help us look at potential funding models that might be able to assist us in securing money to do some examinations of the properties. You know, before Gary's massive involvement, the counties were really limited in what their options were. Option number one, as I've already indicated, was that we could go ahead and just walk away from a property if we viewed it as potentially exposing the county to too much liability. But as I think I've indicated, if you walk away from the property, we're still making the towns and villages whole. I think that was Renee's point. And to the tune of roughly $2 million to the towns annually and potentially $6 million to the school district and the villages, that's pretty costly to the county annually. The second option that we could engage in would be that under the real property tax law, we could initiate what are known as supplementary proceedings. This was something that we introduced as a process when I came in as county attorney in 2015. Since 2015, we've secured $2.4 million in judgments associated with supplementary proceedings under the tax foreclosure law. We have secured in repayment on those judgments approximately $1 million, but that still doesn't take care of the larger problem with those properties that you may not have a debtor out there that you can get money from or get assets from, and it doesn't take care of the larger problem of the property in the middle of the community. The third option we had was to potentially try to review the property through some form of examination or evaluation. But prior to Gary's involvement, once you reviewed it, if there was an issue associated with it, you didn't have anywhere to go. You didn't have any solution. Gary was able to come and explain some of the solutions that we could bring to the table and some of the friends that he could identify that might be able to assist us moving forward on a day-to-day basis. So with that, I'll turn it over to Gary.
Thanks, Steve. Well, thank you. I want to thank the board for giving me the opportunity to work with the county for many years. It's been a pretty exciting county to work for. So following up on what Steve said, so, you know, basically you have these properties. If they're contaminated with petroleum, unfortunately in New York, an owner of a petroleum contaminated site is fully liable for all the cleanup costs, even if you didn't cause the cleanup under the what's called the New York Navigation Law. And so, you know, rightly so, the county said, well, we don't want to take title to these properties because now we're on the hook for these cleanups. And so we tried to identify a couple of things with the team. First, to identify properties that were tax delinquent and that were priority properties where it would be really good to get them cleaned up or back in the tax rolls. Initially, we sort of did this analysis and worked with the DEC to see which of the ones that were on our tax delinquent suspect sites were already addressed by the DEC, because there were some. There were several sites where, when we looked into it, we found out that the DEC had already cleaned it up using money from the what's called the oil spill fund, which is part of the state comptroller's office. And so we said, well, if they've already cleaned it up, maybe we can go ahead and take title. But I raised concerns about potential liability, not only for, you know, you don't want to be held liable for the cleanup costs that had already been incurred, but also maybe there's some future costs that we don't know about. So we developed a process with the state oil spill fund whereby we've entered into agreements with them, the county has. And under those agreements, and these initially started with those that were already cleaned up, under those agreements, the state oil spill fund would provide a liability release for past and future cleanup costs to the county in exchange for our foreclosing on the property. And then when we took title and put it up for auction, we would give the state oil spill fund 50% of the sale auction proceeds. And we did that on a number of sites. And the beauty of that, as some of you may know, is that release that we get from the state oil spill fund actually runs with the land. So the guy that buys it on auction, as long as he didn't cause the spill, you know, he's going to get that, he or she's going to get that protection as well. So that was working very well. And then a few years ago, after discussions with the DEC and the state oil spill fund, things shifted a little, and there was an initiative from the state to say, how do we look at properties, and Matt will talk about this some more, how do we identify properties that are going to help address, you know, blighted properties, mostly abandoned gas stations or abandoned auto repair, which ones are important to the county, and how do we work this out? So we started to identify sites that had not yet been cleaned up, and we started to enter, we've been entering into agreements with the oil spill fund, where again, we would take title, we would get a release of liability in exchange for sale proceeds, part of the sale proceeds. But in those cases, they weren't cleaned up yet. So we would take title and then provide access and authority to the DEC. So now we got these problem properties. They're now foreclosed on, county has title, DEC comes in, does these terrific cleanups, and then the next auction year, we put it up for sale and we get some proceeds. And some of that goes to reimburse the oil spill fund for their costs already. So that has been a real boon to this whole project. And as some of you have seen, we have a table outside that shows these various sites. And they are, many of them, in the center of these communities. They're blighted, and now they're transformed. Either, you know, well, Matt will talk some more about it. The other thing that we've done, sort of a third avenue, is there have been properties where we just don't know enough about them. We don't know if they're contaminated. DEC often doesn't have records on it. And so we've used this process that some of you have heard of called temporary incidents of ownership. We go to the foreclosure court and we get temporary access. So you don't have liability because you haven't taken title yet. And we've used that process to go in and do some investigations. Phase two, typically, to identify whether or not there's contamination, identify how bad it is, how much it might cost to clean up. And in the recent years, because the spill fund and DEC have been working with us so closely, we've said, hey, we got a contaminated property. Is this one that you can work on? And so we've sort of started that whole process on sites that we didn't know enough about before we got started. So that's the sort of the broader picture. I think we've accomplished a lot, but we couldn't have done it without the oil spill fund and without the DEC. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Duffany, who's to give us a more detailed presentation.
Before. Thank you so much, Gary. Thank you all for having me back. I think last time I was here was last fall for the J&L presentation. And while I can confidently say this topic doesn't have quite the shock and awe as a site like J&L, we're going to do the best to give you at least a few pictures here with the tax foreclosure process. And again, for those that don't know me, my name is Matt Duffany, and I'm here to present New York State DEC's effort in this renewed role here in St. Lawrence County. If there are slide-specific questions, feel free to ask, and I'll do my best to accommodate. Now, our department has regulatory jurisdiction for the prevention of and response to releases of petroleum and hazardous materials. We manage this through our regional spill program. Through navigation law, our department is directed to retain contractors as needed to clean up these contaminated sites. Our program is funded by the New York State Comptroller's New York Environmental Protection and Spill Compensation Fund, fondly referred to as the Oil Spill Fund, as you've heard earlier tonight. Now, our program directs activities to clean up the spills, and we use money from that oil spill fund to retain the contractors and to pay the contractors. And at that point, the New York State Attorney General's office is then tasked with trying to recoup those funds from any responsible parties on behalf of the oil spill fund. As some of you may be aware, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation is divided up into 9 regions across the state. St. Lawrence County is located within DEC Region 6, and our regional headquarters is located in Watertown. Region 6 is comprised of 5 counties, and petroleum and hazmat incidences that occur in St. Lawrence, Jefferson, and Lewis counties are managed out of our Watertown office. We also have one staff member in our Potsdam sub-office. You may have seen our spill response staff involved in everything from gas station inspections to contaminated drinking water supplies, motor vehicle accidents, vessel groundings on the St. Lawrence River, as well as the contaminated soil excavation we're about to see here. So the environmental perspective on how we got here. In the day, we were seeing sort of the sins of the past reveal their heads. We were having whole villages contaminated with gasoline. Regulations became more stringent. There was really a push to get a lot of these large-scale cleanups taken care of in the 1990s, not only in the county, but all throughout New York State. Now, in the cases where the responsible party was unknown, unwilling, or unable to do the cleanups themselves, the department took it upon themselves to do these cleanups. Actually, both of these figures are from two very large scale petroleum cleanups back in the 1990s. And as you can imagine, the cost of many of these cleanups exceeded the value of the property. The county was concerned that foreclosing would expose the county to liability, and these properties typically resulted lying vacant for years. Now, the majority of these sites were current or historical commercial gas stations or service stations or manufacturing or commercial facilities that tended to use a large amount of petroleum for their operations. So this also meant that they were typically in well-traveled and sought-after locations, but conversely, that visible disrepair and abandonment was amplified further. Okay, so now we have the growing problem. We needed a solution. My understanding of what happened next was based upon conversations with my predecessor, Gary McCulloch. So if anyone, again, has clarifications, please feel free to chime in. Gary McCulloch, born and raised in a gas station, actually, in Governor, I might add, understood the positive impacts and also the unintended consequences some of these cleanups were having in the county and the properties themselves. He worked with the county for years to help establish the preliminary mechanisms that evolved into the process and the results that we're actually seeing today. And like any endeavor, it came with some trials. We had some chicken and egg scenarios arise. As it was already been mentioned, property access was just an enormous issue. The county needed access to see if the properties were contaminated and whether they wanted to take them or not and to clean them up, but they couldn't get that without ownership and potential liability. The department needed access for cleaning sites up, but just as importantly from our side, we needed confirmation that a release actually took place. Otherwise, the department didn't have a level of comfort that we could legally appropriate funds for something that would turn out to be a clean site. Even after all of that characterization issue was taken care of, there was some discrepancies, we'll say, as to what was considered clean. And that definition certainly depends on who you ask. For example, my specific program is authorized to clean up impacts due to petroleum release. So after we go in, clean it up, we consider a site clean, even though the mountains of tires and junk cars would suggest otherwise to the county who's looking to acquire this and sell it off at auction. So depending upon the specific contaminant, our program may or may not be able to fund that cleanup. And finally, and again, even if those issues could all be resolved, it all still hinged on availability of funds from the state comptroller's office. It can't be understated what a huge role that office has played in this process, even though they aren't here tonight. So what we needed next was an opportunity to kind of break this logjam. In 2009, that opportunity was presented. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act provided federal funds to the states for environmental cleanups. Now, the interesting thing with this funding is there were a lot less strings attached than there are with the current New York State Oil Spill Fund. And this was the opportunity our department needed to demonstrate that these cleanup costs could be established prior to work and that that project could be delivered on time, successfully, and within budget. And with that opportunity, those projects were successful. And now with a few under our belt, the county, its council, and DEC began to cooperatively identify sites for future cleanup should that opportunity arise again. And it really breaks down to just the basics. The county works with the villages and towns to identify sites. The department works with the county to identify viable candidates. The county then works with the comptroller's office to come to an agreement. And then the department works with the county, contractors, villages, and towns for the actual cleanup portion of it. Obviously, the effort rewards all parties. Our department gains access to sites that they wouldn't otherwise have had to do a cleanup. The county and towns put parcels back on the tax roll, and in the county's case, they stopped paying out for parcels they were hesitant to foreclose on. Also mentioned earlier, this process started slowly in the early 2010s. A lot of this on the state side was due to a low oil spill fund balance. Our efforts were then restricted towards sites that protected human health. But once the county identified a list of tax delinquent parcels, they worked with our department to see if a site had known impacts, needed further investigation, or whether our department even had records of it at all. And as Gary mentioned earlier, there were certainly some low-hanging fruit to be had. Some of these sites had already been cleaned up, either by us or the responsible parties. These did not need further work, further investment by the department, and usually just a phone call between the department and the county was enough for them to get the level of comfort to make that agreement with the comptroller's office. However, with that low-hanging fruit gone, and specifically in the last few years, the collaboration has greatly increased. What was previously a quick file review turned into Gary and Deb Snell and myself poring over every detail of these sites, trying to find some way and strategize means to get these parcels off center. Because of the large number of files, the very large number of sites as well, and the limited funding, it was necessary for all parties to establish some mutual priorities and lay down ground rules, I'll call them, for selecting these sites. As briefed earlier, our fund can only be addressed to utilize removal of petroleum impacts. It can't be used for junkyards. It can't be used for tires, etc. So this really helped shorten that list. And because of the limitation on the fund, we also had to show that there was indeed a petroleum release. To address this, as mentioned earlier, the county had already established its own environmental fund, which allowed them the financial means to characterize sites if they could get the property access. And in lieu of full ownership, they were able to very creatively characterize under a TIO using money from that environmental fund. Now, the fact that the county conducted this characterization cannot be overstated. They put themselves in a position to conduct that investigation. They had skin in the game. They were truly vested in this outcome. The fact that they were vested and were being proactive made my job a lot easier to then go to what I had to do to be able to concentrate on what our department does, which is specifically the cleanup. Now, while the county could investigate under a TIO, our department cannot remediate sites under a temporary incidence of ownership. But That investigation provided enough information for the county to then feel comfortable enough to enter an agreement with the comptroller's office prior to that cleanup. So this then allowed the watershed, the foreclosure, the ownership, and then finally the property access. Again, I can't stress enough how important it was for this collaboration and for all sides to really understand each other's abilities, resources, limitations, and priorities. Usually when we present things in terms of limitations, that's it's just what they are, they're limitations. However, in this process, I could see, though, they're actually the benefit. While it may not be ideal to address all of the county sites, I believe by narrowing our scope and our focus, it made it much easier to bring in resources from all parties involved to come up to this outcome. So rather than trying to navigate the unknown in search of a loophole or an exception or grant funding and expending all of our very limited time and resources on parcels that may or may not ever come to fruition and get cleaned up, we've focused resources on the sites that all parties feel comfortable fit into each of our respective boxes. And with that, we're able to move forward very expeditiously. All right, implementation. So we have our priorities in agreement now. We have our sites identified. We have access in place. Now my department can move forward with implementation of the cleanup. And I can honestly say after everything you've heard here, and the cleanup is by far the easiest part. I'm very blessed to work with great staff of the department and great contractors to make it the easy part. And based upon what I've heard, I think the reason they brought me here was for the pictures. So at least we'll jump into the pictures. All right, first stop, this is the former MR Bells in Canton. A long history of known petroleum impacts. There had been generations of tanks in the ground previously, and cleanup was attempted, but it was inadequate. The service was, the station was still in operation. A lot of it was inaccessible. There were buildings in the way. So the county went and made an agreement with the Village of Canton. Once that building was removed, the department was then able to finish the job that was started all those years ago. These pictures are the service station as the then new tanks going in the ground there on the right. And after the building was removed, we were able to go in, remove those tanks, again on the right, that same set of tanks. We also discovered another previously unknown tank, which is not atypical on these generational service stations. You can actually see the holes on the tank on the left of that unknown tank. All said and done, approximately 3,000 tons of impacted soil removed for about $320,000. This one was really tricky from an operational standpoint. I was amazed at the amount of traffic that intersection gets. Lots of overhead wires, tight spot for trucks to get in and out of, but I know the crews certainly felt good when that one got done with, but that was a good project. Next, we'll head over to DeKalb. Unfortunately, I don't have the date for this photo. So right now, the picture's taken from what is the current State Highway 812. County 17 intersection is just behind that building there on the left. So this is the former D&L grocery with the canopy there. The Standard Oil service station was gone, I don't know what time, but well before mine. All right, this is currently what the D&L site was looking at with our backs to County 17. The older generation of tanks were pulled in 1998. Some impacted soil was removed, not very much of it. It was all piled out back behind the store. Well, most of it remained in place. In 2013, and again, a real driver on why we do these things, the department received a call from residents across 812 that their well water had an odd flavor. We went out and sampled and confirmed that it was gasoline constituents. We currently do have two properties across the road that have treatment systems on their water supply. Through the work with the county and the town of DeKalb, this building was condemned. And after that building removal, we were able to proceed. You can see on the right, that green tank was the one that was put back into the ground in 1998. We pulled that one out, that was removed. That's being cleaned by our contractor, NRC, formerly Optech, out of Messina. And that brings up another really nice aspect of this arrangement with the county. Our department maintains standby contractors for response and remedial actions all throughout the region. One of them is NRC Optech out of Messina. For nearly all of these St. Lawrence County tax delinquent sites, NRC was the prime contractor, and they utilized local subs for the materials and the handling. So on top of the obvious benefit to the county, the town, the state, for making these projects move forward, now you also have local companies, local workers that are doing this work, which in my experience always brings a little bit more pride and a sense of ownership to being a part of these great things happening right in their backyard.
Just so that you guys are all aware, this is the Weaver location.
And that is the after. This was the largest of the ones we've done recently, approximately 7,000 tons out, to the tune of about $670,000. And that angle just happened to provide a nice little before and after of that historical one. Now, unlike the DeKalb, and in most cases, when we've gone in to do our job, by the time we leave, the property looks nearly the same or identical to what was how we started. This site is the deli in Richville. You can see the tanks over there on the left. And there's the after.
This is the Dalton location.
Approximately 1,700 tons out of the ground, around $200,000. Again, a great example. Now we have, you know, two buildings in fair shape and a clean site for the next owner. And those are just a few of the recent ones. Given the years that have passed since this process began, I asked the county to provide me a list with tax delinquent sites that have had DEC involvement in one way or another, everything from professional interpretation to actual cleanup. And it was more than 40 parcels. And that number was actually, I was surprised at how high that number was, but they've certainly added up over the years. When we really started gaining steam over the past 3 years, the DEC and the Oil Spill Fund have spent about $2.7 million cleaning up 11 sites. Again, many of these have been on the DEC's to-do list for quite a while, since the early and mid-1990s. And those figures do not include the two sites we're currently working on. We have one in the village of Messina and one in the town. I believe the one in the town of Messina may even be completed this week. Now, obviously, these cleanups make for a great end product, but as discussed earlier, they don't happen overnight. From the tax process and that initiation until the spill's cleaned up and the site's auctioned off, it may be a good 2 to 3 years in the making, sometimes more, sometimes less. But that's an important point to this, is that it's not a fast process, and it's deliberately not a fast process. It's very thoughtful. It's very deliberate. This ensures that all legal and technical measures are in place prior to our implementation. And it's important that we're so deliberate because even with all those legalities and technicalities covered, funding from the comptroller might not be available to implement these projects. Our department, our staff, and our contractors might not have the resources available to make these move forward, and then they don't move. However, by doing all this back office work, by dotting the I's and crossing the T's, by doing the preliminary field work, by prioritizing, the county has put themselves in a really good position to be shovel ready, for lack of a better term. So when the oil spill fund does have the money available, when we have staff, when our contractors have resources, they have put themselves in a great position to jump on those opportunities and move forward and implement these that have been on the waiting list. And because we have a steady stream of these sites now going into the hopper, we're seeing it continually bear fruit as we have in these recent years. And finally, like anything in life, people and timing play a large role in the success, both in the past and moving forward. I got to say, we're doing this on a couple sites with other counties and municipalities within our region and throughout the state. St. Lawrence County, by sheer numbers, is the leader by far. I found this curious, so I asked Gary McCulloch, my predecessor, on what he thought made St. Lawrence County different and unique in this sense. And he answered, and I'll just read this off of here. The difference is trust. This success did not come from a complicated formal program, but from dedicated public servants willing to understand each party's priorities and constraints, and to then carve a path mutually beneficial to the agencies and the public they serve. And I thought that summed it up rather well. Thank you again.
Thank you, Matt. This has been a great program collectively, collaboratively. I think Matt couldn't have summed it up any better. It has been a matter of trust. Our team that we have comprised are a great group of public servants who are dedicated to what they're doing and dedicated to trying to help the county and the community that they serve. This has been a win for the county. It's a win for the communities. It's a win for the DEC. We've got economic development. We've gotten rid of blighted property. We're helping in certain situations, as Matt identified, neighbors and residents have clean drinking water so that they can actually enjoy their homes. And the county itself is no longer having to pay out the enormous amounts of back taxes to make the towns and villages and school districts whole. So this has been a great project, and we intend to continue moving forward as long as we possibly can and doing this in the future. If there are any questions, we'll be willing to take those questions now.
Thank you. Do you have any idea how many more there are? Is there an estimate?
That's a very difficult question to answer, and part of the reason is because I think, as Matt's presentation identified, as Gary's presentation identified, we get a sense of whether or not a property can be a part of this program once they hit the tax foreclosure process. If a property is out there and is potentially blighted or is potentially contaminated, but the owner actually continues to pay the taxes, then it won't wind up on our radar here at the county. It's entirely possible that the DEC has maintained some numbers, but I would find it highly unlikely that their numbers would reflect what our numbers reflect and vice versa. They're looking at different data than we are. They have different historical perspective than we do. So the easy answer to your question is no, we don't have an idea of how many. But the corollary to that is, I'm sure there'll be more.
And there's definitely less than there was.
There's definitely less than there was. Mr. Denisha?
Thank you, Steve. I would just like to, obviously, there are a number of properties that are within my district, and I've had the opportunity and the privilege to work with Gary, with Matt, with yourself, and on the behalf of the constituents within my district, thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you. Okay, if there won't be any more questions, we'll take a brief break so that we can walk out, take a few looks at the pictures that are outside. We have some before and after shots of some of the properties that we've hit. We also have here in the main atrium a map that identifies all of the locations that have either been cleaned up or are pending in cleanup, so that you can see where your individual district has in fact been impacted by this project, this program. And we'll say our good evenings to our friends from the DEC and thank them for coming to join us this evening.
Let's get started. Okay, we lacking anybody? I think we're all set. Cool. Thank you, Renee, for the presentation and your role in the cleanup. All right, so our first resolution is charging tax items. Is there a motion to approve? Ms. Curran, seconded by Mr. Arquette.
Okay. This is an annual resolution presented at this time of year every year. It's done in order to put these items on the upcoming tax levy. It represents the amounts due to towns for tax refunds, cancellation of taxes, and assessment errors.
Any questions for Ms. Cole? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Our next resolution is adopting the mortgage tax report, moved by Mr. Perkins, second by Ms. Curran. Ms. Cole.
Okay. This is a semi-annual resolution that allows the treasurer's office to distribute monies collected by the county clerk that are due to the towns. The county clerk turns over the funds to my office monthly, and twice a year the county clerk submits a report to the state for approval. Upon approval from the state of that report, we submit a resolution for your adoption. This amount represents the April 1st through September 30th, 2019 time period. and I can actually give you a comparison for the same time period last year. This one was $555,000 last year. The same time comparable was about $504,000. So, give or take, it's a little better this year.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Cole or concerning this resolution? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Our next resolution is modifying the 2019 budget for the Treasurer's Office for additional sales tax distribution. Moved by Mr. Arquette, second by Mrs. Arquette.
Okay.
That didn't sound right, did it?
All right.
Ms. Nancy Arquette.
So, we're projecting to exceed budget for sales tax revenue this year, and because we share the revenues with the municipalities, we will also exceed the budgeted expense for sales tax distribution. This resolution addresses that, and it will allow us to distribute the additional monies at the end of the fourth quarter.
Mr. Haggard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll ask the question I asked privately, ask it publicly. This is going to be distributed under the current formula that we're using now. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Thank you very much. So next up is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. Ms. Meyer Blashwa.
Good evening.
Our resolution is, do I have it here? Okay. Is authorizing the Treasurer to modify the 2019 budget for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act to transfer formula funds from dislocated worker accounts to adult accounts. Moved by Mr. Forsythe, second by Mr. Haggard and Mr. Reagan.
Thank you. Basically, what we are asking to do is to decrease appropriations in dislocated worker and transfer them to adult training tuition fees to the tune of about $45,000. There seems to be less dislocated worker money that needs to be spent and more in adult training.
Any questions for Ms. Lashua? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Highway, Mr. Don Chambers. Our first resolution is modifying the 2019 budget for the Department of Highways for machinery, rental, and winter materials. Moved by Mr. Burke, second by Ms. Curran.
Yes, thank you. The resolution deals with winter maintenance. Our salt prices went up from 50 some dollars a ton to 70 some dollars a ton. So therefore we have some increased cost. In looking to move some money around within the existing highway budget to cover hopefully the cost to the end of the year. Hopefully Mother Nature cooperates and isn't too rough on us.
You're here. Any questions for Mr. Chambers? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you.
Our next resolution is abandoning a portion of State Highway number 732, also known as State Highway 68, in the town of Oswegatchie. Moved by Mr. Lightfoot, second by Ms. Nancy Arquette. Mr. Chambers.
Yes. Back in 2014, the legislature approved working with the state of New York and the Ogdensburg Bridge and Port Authority to move State Highway 68 from its old location to its now new location to extend the runway. So the county had some interest in the underlying property of State Route 68 back to when the right-of-way was first acquired. So this is basically extinguishing any rights to the right-of-way, which is now in the runway protection zone inside the fence at the Ogdensburg Bridge and Port Airport.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Thank you.
Next resolution is abandoning sections of State Highway number 9496, also known as State Highway 812 in the town of Pitcairn. Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Denisha and Ms. Curran.
Yes. This goes back to some issues back in the 1980s where the maintenance jurisdiction and property rights for the old Route 812 through that area was realigned with the intersection with 3. This area is currently people's lawns. The roadway has been removed. The state highways have been long since a few decades ago relocated. And this would be basically giving the property back to those property owners impacted. There's basically on the right-hand side as you're going south on 812, right before the intersection with 3. So it's basically for a realignment. And at this point, there's no need for a roadway in that area. It's actually real close to the existing intersections, and state wouldn't even allow a road to go in that location anyway. So no highway use at this point.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers concerning this resolution? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
The next resolution is authorizing the chair to sign a contract with Delta Engineers, Architects, and Land Surveyors, DPC, for professional engineering services for 2 bridges on Jones Road over the West Branch of the St. Regis River. Bin number 3366590, bin number 3341-1150. Moved by Mr. Haggart, second by Mr. Burke, Mr. Arquette, and Ms. Curran. Mr. Chambers.
Yes. Two structures that are listed here were closed in September due to some issues with the existing structures. They are historic in nature. One of the proposals that I would have this consultant look at is using some historic trusses to replace these historic trusses that would likely give this crossing a full legal load. Before it was closed, they were posted to 3 tons. They're very light trusses. We have made approximately 20 years a promise to reuse these other heavier historic trusses. So that's one of the concepts that we'd be looking into utilizing to get this this crossing back open and also follow up through on our promise to the SHPO. Going through the permitting process, it's likely to take over a year to do this, so this project would likely not go into construction until at least 2021.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers concerning this resolution? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Next resolution is approving supplemental agreement number 3 for preliminary engineering design and final design for South Shore Road over the Oswegatchie River, bin number 3340940, pin number 775371. So moved by Mr. Denisha, second by Ms. Curran and Ms. Terminelli.
By resolution 44719, this board approved a change order for the engineering firm to do additional work that was mainly associated with the environmental permitting for this project. Passing this resolution allows us to receive the 95% funding that's associated with that change order.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
The next resolution is authorizing the chair to award and sign contract for 2 temporary bridges over Jones Road over West Branch of the St. Regis River, town of Hobbington, bin number 3366590, bin number 3341150. Moved by Mr. Arquette, Ms. Curran, Mr. Perkins, Mrs. Arquette, and Mr. Haggard.
Yes, thank you. I think as the board approved the going out to bid for a temporary crossing for the Jones Road location for recreational crossing, it will not be you know, will not be a vehicular crossing. It will be restricted to a recreational by the width of the proposed structure. So it will be basically a one-lane recreational crossing. The bid opening is scheduled for December 2nd at 3 o'clock. So the actual numbers I will not be able to bring to you until the board meeting at that point. And if I may add that probably at the board meeting, the resolution that's on after that should probably precede this one, because that's the funding mechanism for the project. But this crossing was part of the GEIS for the multi-use trail. This is not currently part of the multi-use trail, but could be in the future if we expand through that area.
Mr. Hackett.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chambers. I think that this shows our continuing commitment to the multi-use trail, and I thank you for bringing this forward, and hopefully this will provide the solution for this year to continue moving forward with the multi-use trail use this winter. Thank you.
Mr. Arquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Don has said, the bid is, it's out. We don't have any numbers to really debate at this point, but I just wanted to stress the importance of the location of these two bridges for the recreational use. That not only is it critical navigation point for all of our riders, but many businesses are reliant on those bridges being used, and it is a 12-month a year thing at this point. So this is I think this is good money going after better money, and we, any investment that we may be forced to make on this will be returned in the revenue generation from those activities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arquette. Anyone else? I won't be supporting the resolution. I'm concerned. I understand all the factors that both Mr. Haggard and Mr. Arquette have presented, and I'm a little dismayed that the permanent structure can't go into the 2021 year, and I understand we would lose two seasons of that. I'm concerned about the liability. I'm concerned about the cost of a temporary structure, and I'm also concerned about the cost of removal. So I will not be supporting this resolution. Anyone else? Mr. Perkins.
Thank you. You know, we've been trying to get this multi-use trail system going for around 15 years now. It supports a lot of our local establishments. Many of them are small mom and pop stores with few number of employees. Our tourism is something we've been promoting as our economy, just like the fishing industry. Now look where that is now. We're starting to see great profits from that. We're on a national destination list. If, you know, we've got people that are, well, a person that's looking to potentially buy a property that because of the trail system and the need for opening a convenience store, gas station. If we don't support this, we're just telling these people, don't count on us again. You know, why would we open businesses if you're not going to help us out? I'm going to support it. We all talk about increasing our economy. This is the time to act on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Anyone else? I haven't changed my mind, so all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Myself. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next resolution is modifying the 2019 Department of Highways budget for temporary bridges over the Jones Road over the West Branches. Pardon me? Excuse me. The funding piece, okay. Over the West Branch of the St. Regis River, town of Hopkinton, bid number 3366590, bid number 3341150. Moved by Mr. Haggard, second by Mr. Burke and Mr. Arquette. And Mr. Perkins.
Apologize for not having the numbers in here, but without having the actual bid results until, again, as I said, the date of your legislative meeting, I won't be able to fill in some numbers. But my plan is to have those numbers to you for a session so you can make a decision on the direction in which we go.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? So we don't know what the bids are, and so we don't know what the money is. In my mind, even if it was 100% funded, I would still be against it because of the liability issues and the cost of removal. So I will be voting no. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next resolution is... Update on the outpost project, Mr. James.
Yes. Tomorrow I will be meeting with the architect to discuss the projects. The one at our location, current outpost location in Russell. The other at the Lisbon / Ogdensburg transfer station on that property. And the other co-located at the town of Potsdam facility in the village of Potsdam on 345. The architect at this point has provided a few options at each location. I've looked at some preliminary drawings, and again, tomorrow morning I'm going to have some discussions along with some of my staff members with the architect to work out some of the details. We do still need to work to move forward with whatever type of agreement we are going to do with Potsdam, the town of Potsdam, so I think that is an important step as well. We're moving forward with the development of the plans as the board has funded, but we still need to work on some type of agreement with the town. I have had a meeting with the town supervisor and the town highway superintendent and their codes people to discuss the project, and they are supportive of the moving forward.
Any questions for Mr. Chambers? Is there, barring the situation where we cannot reach an agreement that's acceptable to this board, or do we have other options in Potsdam?
At this point, we're currently looking at with the town, because the town is indicated that they are in support of working together. We currently co-locate an outpost there, and the town would the town has expressed that they would like to continue our shared services working together at that site.
I understand that, but if the plan doesn't come to fruition, is there anything
we would have to we would have to go out and find another site at that point.
Thank you. All right, so next up is solid waste. We have a resolution approving the 2020 St. Lawrence County Solid Waste Department fee rates. Moved by Ms. Curran, second by Mr. Perkins, Mr. Nanisha, and Mr. Lightfoot. Okay, Don?
Yes. What you see on this resolution is the center column is the current pricing schedule for the multiple items at the at the solid waste transfer sites, and the right hand column is the proposed. One item of particular is the mattress box springs that, you know, we did not have that in our fee schedule for 19. Part of the solid waste diversion plan that Dank had to do for their landfill expansion was to have some solid waste diversion, and one of the items that Dank and DEC have looked at is removing mattresses from the landfill because they don't compact well. They take up a lot of airspace, and so they have a recycling program. So the proposal is to charge an $8 fee, and from the residents that would bring them in, and then Dank in turn would be billing the county $8 for the service of recycling the mattresses.
Mr. Forsyth.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. I noticed the one I noticed was Augsburg Municipal Sludge.
Yes, I can explain that as well.
Yeah,
yes.
I'd like you to please.
Yes, the Augsburg sludge is actually, the majority of it is now being land applied. And so years ago there was, you know, a lot of tonnage that came through. Now it's down to just the grit, which is a very minor amount. And we've put that amount closer to what we would charge other municipalities for, like, spring cleanup. It's very close to that pricing. You know, the grit is a little bit of an issue to deal with. So, we tried to put a pricing that was more equivalent to what other municipalities are paying for disposals.
Do you have any rough idea of how much sludge they produce in a year? Any
Well, their sludge, I think they were several thousand. There were a few thousand tons, I believe, before. Now I think this is like 100 tons maybe a year of grit, less than 100 tons. Thank you.
They don't bring us the sludge.
Right. So it's dropped dramatically. It's a small amount.
Okay.
Mr. Denasia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to note that this afternoon the Highway and Solid Waste Committee met, and we reviewed the fee rates as a committee. And during our meeting, we all concurred that that this was we thought this was good.
Anyone else? On the recycling, our true costs are about $160 a ton on the recycling.
That's correct. Yes.
So we know that there's a solution at hand. How far out away?
The Harrisville site at this point should be open at the beginning of the second quarter. However, Denk has provided some relief by dropping the tip fee altogether if we transport to Recycle America in Liverpool, New York. Dank will be picking up the tip fee. But the transportation, of course, will be on the county for that additional haul, but it's still a savings, considerable savings from what we're doing right now by Dank taking care of the tip fee.
So if we end up doing that to Liverpool, what would our cost be, our actual cost per ton? You have to figure that yet?
We have not. I mean, there is cost associated, of course, by you know, for the trucking, but you know, it's probably if you get the depreciation of the vehicle, and probably a $600 cost per load. Yep. And you know, we're you know, can run somewhere around 20 tons. It's going to vary, you know. So it's hard to give you an exact, because I don't know, each load can vary, you know, 4 or 5 tons.
It should get us under 100 ton, though, $100 a ton.
It should, by far, yes.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Chambers concerning this resolution? None. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Our next resolution concerning solid waste is authorizing the chair to sign a contract with All Paid Incorporated, doing business as Government Paid Net, to provide credit card services at the solid waste main office and transfer stations. Moved by Mr. Forsyth. Mr. Burke seconded by Ms. Curran also. Mr. Chambers.
Yes. Currently, we do not have the ability at our solid waste facilities to take credit cards. GovPay Net actually has no charge to the county for the service, and actually is used by other parts of the county government as a credit card system. The fees associated with the credit card, due to the fact that it is an enterprise fund, will be put onto the credit card user. So there will be the fees that are associated with the card are actually added on to the fees. So any fees associated with the use of a credit card will be paid by the consumer.
Mr. Forsyth.
Welcome to the 21st century. Good deal.
Well, the 20th at
least. Long overdue. Yep.
Mr. Mr. Haggard.
Yes. The question on the fees to the users, Mr. Chambers, do you have any idea what the percentage is going to have to be paid by the user against the payment? Is it going to be a one-time one fee, like $2.50, or is it going to be a percentage of the cost? What is it going to be?
We're going to charge a percentage. I believe it's about
3%. Yeah, so it's an extremely high percentage to the user. I mean, that's a very high fee to the user. The problem with GovNet is that I understand it helps the county, but it also, against our residents and so forth being using this stuff, the fee is significantly higher than any other fee would be for using credit cards for a retail way. And that is a concern, I think, for some of our constituents. If they're going to use that, is that going to increase it dramatically?
Right. Well, I think most credit cards are somewhere in the range of 2% if the merchant pays at this point. So it's somewhere in that range. The credit card, different credit cards have different fees that they charge. So, but that's basically not that far from just recouping the basic charge that a credit card would charge.
I understand the merchant fee, but the person that's the customer doesn't pay the merchant fee. The merchant
typically
almost always.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Perkins.
It's not mandatory to use a credit card, correct? There's other forms of payment?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Typically, if you use a credit card at an auction, at Blanchard's or whatever, you're going to pay that fee also. Your Walmarts or whoever, they're absorbing that cost. In this case, they're not. Mr. Forsyth.
I believe we have a 10% buyer fee at the auction, right?
6%, but if they use the credit card, becomes 10.
But we charge 6 even for...
But we're talking about a utility fee.
You finished? Oh.
No, I think that this is a convenience fee. It's not the same as a merchant fee. And other departments in the county already do the same thing. The county clerk accepts credit cards. The convenience fee is passed on because we don't pay fees with county tax dollars.
Do you have a question, Mr. Haggard? Okay, thank you. Okay, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chambers. Mr. Green. Our next resolution concerns real property. And the resolution is elections, real property, and community college apportionments for the year 2020. Moved by Mr. Burke, second by Mr. Lightfoot and Mr. Forsyth. Mr. Green.
This is a annual resolution showing the apportionment of charges for each town. The four categories of these chargebacks are election charges, real property charges, community college, and the workers' compensation.
Any questions for Mr. Green? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Green. Our next resolution involves the county attorney, and that is the authorizing the self-insurance plan administrator to sign a contract, with Triad Group LLC, third-party administrator, for the workers' compensation plan. Moved by Mr. Lightfoot, second by Mr. Forsyth and Ms. Curran. Mr. Butt.
Thank you. I apologize, I was messing with my chair. I feel like I sat in an elementary school chair. Thank you. The resolution you have before you is to authorize the contract that would be executed with Triad Group. Triad Group acts as the third-party administrator associated with the self-insurance fund for the workers' compensation plan. The plan administration itself is operated out of the county attorney's office. This would authorize the execution of that contract for a three-year period, but does reference that contract can be extended for an additional two-year period after the initial three.
Any questions for our county attorney? Mr. Forsyth.
I didn't see a cost. Is there a cost there, or did I miss it?
No, the cost isn't listed there. We received seven bids. The cost associated with Triad, their base bid was 120. This actually represents a drop from their initial bid, and they were the successful bidder 5 years ago when we brought them on. 4 years ago. Triad was at 127 and is now the successful bidder at 120.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Button? All?
I apologize.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
Sir?
There are additional fees that can be assessed, so it's difficult to actually calculate the contract solely based on the base cost. If we engage investigations, if we have nurse case managers, that would naturally increase the from the base cost. But I can give you the base cost that was provided, and that was the 120.
What's that? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Our next resolution is authorizing the chair to sign a contract with Atlantic Testing Laboratories, LLC, for environmental investigation on tax delinquent properties in St. Lawrence County. Moved by Ms. Curran, second by Mr. Perkins. Mr. Button.
Thank you. The resolution you have before you would authorize the chair to sign an agreement with Atlantic Testing Laboratories. They came in as the low bidder significantly from the other bidders in the solicitation for offers that Gary Bowich received to perform the phase two investigations at these four locations. The four locations are listed here on the resolution.
Any questions for Mr. Button? All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
I just wanted to give a quick update with respect to workers' comp. The numbers have been coming in for end of the year. I wanted to note that if they continue through to December 31st in the fashion that they are, based on our own records, it would appear that we will have our best year in workers' comp in 12 years. There are 2,767 full-time and part-time employees that are covered associated with the plan. There are 1,702 volunteer firemen that are covered with the plan. From last year, that represents 5 members dropping off of the full-time and part-time, but actually represents a 5-member increase associated with the volunteer fire. So in terms of overall bodies, we've actually managed, but it seems to be fairly stable with respect to the coverage.
Thank you, Mr. Button.
Yes, sir.
Next up is our county administrator's report. We're going to start out with the resolution. The resolution is modifying the 2019 budget for assigned council costs. Moved by Ms. Curran, seconded by Ms. Arquette.
So this resolution seeks to move $495,000 split pretty evenly between criminal court and family court. As you're aware, the Hurl-Herring allocation of funding, the contract's now been signed, so we're able to work with the state to identify funds above and beyond our cost prior to the settlement of that case. We're still seeing extraordinary costs. Looking at back 5 years, the budgeted amount that we've looked at for a criminal has seen an increase over 5 years of $130,000. And the average modification that you're looking at tonight over those same 5 years has been $133,000. So those costs we've looked at over the years, we've tried to respond as we look at the trends and increase the budget. Fortunately, for 2020, as we look forward, we've budgeted an additional $250,000 associated with the Hurl-Herring increase. We don't know as of January 1st what that's going to look like. It might explode, it might drop off, but we're trying to be prepared in that way. Our average modification for the criminal budget, so there's three areas, there's criminal, appeals, and family. We don't get any assistance at this time on the family side, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But on the criminal side, our average spend is $438,000. So we're looking at this modification. We've also looked internally, much like you've seen other departments do, to move appropriations that have already been levied, so to speak. And that allows us to minimize the take from contingency. So typically, you'd see probably between $250,000 and $300,000, depending on the year, in criminal. We've been able to move some of those funds out of indigent defense and reduce the amount from contingency to $155,000. We've also seen a reduction in appeals costs. And if you look at the five-year average for those, we're looking at about a $20,000 increase. So 5 years ago, we were budgeting about $200,000. And we've moved up to $260,000, and we're back down around $220,000. But we've also seen an increase. That average modification looks more like $46,000. So depending on the year and the appeals filed, you'll recall that we pass a resolution annually for the Rural Law Center, who's handling the appeals for us. We've seen $152,000 reduction over 5 years in that area. So typically we look at all three categories and try to make sure that the funding will cover all three. And when we see a drop in one area, and in this case family court specifically, we see tremendous increases. And they typically tend to be able to move across those three lines in the budget to be able to afford the overall average cost, which is about $738,000. And that's all three areas. Where we're seeing real increases is in the family court. And we haven't seen any state reprieve where family court costs are associated. That five-year average we've looked at increasing, and we've gone as high as $360,000. But last year we saw an extraordinary year of $639,000 just in family court assigned counsel. So the average actual over 5 years is $447,000. The average modification that you're looking at is about $70,000. But in the last 5 years also, there's been 2 years, 2016 and so far this year, where we aren't seeing an increase, and in 2014, where we didn't have to modify the budget for family court. But overall, the 2020 budget has added $190,000 already budgeted for next year. So we're looking at seeing these kinds of numbers again. And that doesn't begin to explain how the costs are associated with how far away we have to get attorneys to come and report to court. So the resolution you see before you tonight attempts to address that issue. We'll keep you posted as far as how far into. What we try to also do is after the year closes, when we receive bills for court that took place in 2019, in January and into early February, we try to make sure we book those costs into the year where they occurred. So we'll keep you apprised as far as those numbers and how they look as the year closes. Any questions?
Questions? Mr. Haggart, will you be recusing?
I will be abstaining.
You'll be abstaining. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? One abstention.
Okay, and just a couple of other items. I wanted to invite you Tuesday, December 10th, from 12:30 to 4:30. We've asked the state folks to come in and conduct the Emergency Operations Center training. This was actually something that I had anticipated providing to you long about May, but they had some staffing changes and some curriculum changes, so they're able to come. It'll happen in this room, so if you're interested, let us know so we can make sure we've got enough materials for you, but that will take place on Tuesday, December the 10th. I did want to remind you, I think you've all received an invitation to the retirement party scheduled December 7th for Sheriff Wells. We did have CSEA negotiations begin last week. We'll provide you an update in executive session on that, and we are scheduled again to meet tomorrow. Next week, we'll begin the solid waste negotiations scheduled for December 4th, 5th, and 6th. So we'll keep you apprised of that as well. Last week, we met with the City of Ogdensburg with regard to the sales tax negotiations. We did not schedule another meeting, and a variety of scenarios were discussed. Again, we'll update you on that in executive. We did cancel the Space Committee meeting that we had scheduled in conflict with the Highway Solid Waste Committee. I'd like to reschedule that for December the 9th, which will happen before Operations and Services at 4:15 in my office. If you could check your calendars and see if that works, that would be a great time to meet. That also is the night that LC Drives will be presenting to the Operations Committee. So if we can help you get the tour in before that meeting, let us know. Vacancy Review Committee meeting is scheduled for a week from tomorrow, the 3rd of December at 3:00. I don't have the totals on that yet, but we'll be looking at the vacancies requested. We'll also at that Vacancy Review Committee meeting be looking to address the discovery component. So I'll speak to it a little bit further on in my report tonight, but we have budgeted $400,000 set aside, not appropriated, but set aside to address the concerns that are anticipated in the changes with discovery and bail reform and all of the impacts that we anticipate in 2020. At vacancy, you will begin to see what those look like in the form of personnel. So the vacancy committee will consider those first, and then we'll bring those out for discussion at the appropriate committee meetings. Ready Commission held a meeting last Wednesday in Albany to have discussion, question answers on the programs, the projects that are being funded. I believe that we're moving over from what we consider to be a DOT project and working with DASNY as well as a funding source. But they did talk a little bit more about the reduction in the 15% local contribution down to the 5%. So that, I think, gave an opportunity for some discussion and some questions they're still looking into with regard to how that will be counted. Is that going to be labor? Is that going to be engineering costs? So there's some things still outstanding as we work our way through this. But to that end, most of you are familiar with one of the projects that are funded for the Fort La presentation in Ogdensburg. And they've been awarded $1.295 million for their trail to reconstruct and, I think, deal with some of the issues they saw this year. With their 5% match, being a local nonprofit, they are looking at about a $64,000, almost $65,000 5% match. Now, if you recall, in a reserve from about at least 10 to 15 years ago, the county had set aside, I'd have to get the exact dollar amount, but $58,000. And we had added to it over time. It began as about $30,000, and each year there was a little bit added to that. And then at $58,000, that was around the time that we started to exclude some of the outside partner agency types about 10 years ago. So that sits with the original earmark for when they rebuilt the fort. I think that many of us have watched over time. They have a beautiful trail there. They have a lot of school field trips that go there. They have a lot of the reenactments that take place. But one of the things, looking at this capital investment, was to consider potentially allocating that $58,000 as the local match. So that's something that we've had some preliminary conversations with them about. The $64,000 for them is quite a lift, even though it's only 5% of that project. So that's something that I would endure you to consider with regard to the fort and the work that they're trying to accomplish, in the sense that it's already set aside. It's not something that's been utilized by the board or transferred for any purpose. It sits out there with the anticipation of a capital project, and I believe that this potentially would fit. So I did just want to mention that to you. Certainly a conversation we can have as we move forward.
Mr. Forsyth.
Ever, just to that effect, my understanding when we used to vote on that and they used to come each year, was for the construction of the fort only. Is there any legal ramifications with that, you think?
I think the board can make the determination. It was for a capital project at the time. I think they changed their projects over time to get some of the other work done that I think was more tangible with the funds. It's an option for the board to consider. I did want to mention to you at the board meeting next week, we will hold the memorial service. We will be honoring one former member, Mr. Burns. So we have invited all of his family to join us for that part of the meeting. Also in January, we would like to take an annual photo of the Board of Legislators at the organizational meeting. So if typically that's a meeting I think all members attend, if it's possible, we'd like to get a photo of the group. And I believe the only other thing I wanted to report on to you, last week Chairman Lightfoot asked for an update on totals of what the board's being asked for in as most recently as the beginning of November. So with regard to contingency, in this month, so considering last week's resolutions as well as this week, there's approximately $338,064 to be considered next week at the board meeting. You'll remember a few months ago, we moved some funds, $13,000, to honor the contract obligation. And last week, the board was asked to consider the $35,564 move for another contract settlement. Now, there was $87,000 set aside, so that leaves a balance of about $38,000. The next request this month is for $147,500 of capital dollars that were in targeted contingency for buildings and grounds. And Dale was here last week and went through some of the bigger projects that they're working on to set those aside. That came up just shy of the $155,000 that was set aside in targeted contingency, leaving about $7,500. And then the $155,000 that you've been asked for was the balance of the $147,500. So, considering the three major spends in contingency this year, you set aside $3.9 million. The big spends were the 1.9 foster care move that the board did last month, the $62,000 poll books acquisition that were in place for the election, and the $216,000, 177 was targeted of that for the jail software upgrade this year, but there was an unanticipated $40,000 spent. So what does all that mean? $2.8 million has been or is being requested in that short list I gave you of the 3.9 set aside this year in contingency. So partly the ask for Spillman, which is the issue of late that you'll see at Operations Committee next month, is for $460,000, one-time spend for a six-year commitment to the software. With a one-time spend of $41,000, which is the balance of what's left when the joining municipalities, and you'll get that in great detail, what's left of that spend. What we're looking at now is the procurement requirements associated with this, as well as the other municipalities. If, in fact, this is going to have a county cost, and I say that because so far with Spillman, emergency services grants have been able to absorb that roughly $77,000, $78,000 cost annually. And if we buy it up front for the $460,000, we're trying to find out the answer if, in fact, that means we won't be able to. So that then becomes a county cost. Now, each year we're subject to find out whether or not we're going to get the grant money, so at any given time it can become a county cost. We're trying to look at the savings, approximately $60,000 plus, and if that benefit outweighs, so when we make a recommendation to you, if it makes sense to make that acquisition that would bring the other municipalities in, and the request that I've made of them is to bring you where we are now with Spillman and what this incredible investment of tax dollars means for where we'll be in 2020. There have been 18 resolutions this year moving funds from contingency, most of which have been targeted, and that compares in 2018 and 2017, respectively, to 12 and 13 resolutions, and in 2016, of 16 resolutions moving money out of contingency. So we're not too far off. I think there's been a couple of extraordinary things, the ones I mentioned with Board of Elections and foster care, some extraordinary costs, not unlike we saw 2 years ago, if you remember, when Operation Gravy Train took over $1 million also. Any questions?
Mr. Haggard.
Yes, on the Spillman, we talked about, and it was presented last week on grants. The emergency services grants pays for all of Spillman currently right now. And what we apply for those grants on an annual basis, is that correct?
Yes.
So basically, we're paying up front in anticipation of being reimbursed on an annual basis based on those grants, is that correct?
That's the question. If the acquisition in late 2019 would then be reimbursable because the cost would be incurred in those out years.
Okay, and we're currently using Spillman right
we are.
Now.
We are.
Okay, so there's a public safety issue no matter how we come into the mix. So if we're successful in going forward with the grants, basically the Spillman cost will be nothing.
As it has been for the past six.
Right. And there's no anticipation that those grants are going to just automatically go away, considering the fact that Spillman is used so universally, not throughout only this state, but universally throughout the Northeast. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
The only concern is if, in fact, a cost was paid in this year, would it qualify? That's what we're looking for from Homeland Security right now.
And when do we anticipate we'll get that answer?
I'm hopeful before your presentation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, of course.
Mr. Lightfoot.
Can you give us the totals on the write-off? I believe they are from, is it community services or whatever? There was a considerable amount of money that was talked about a
yes.
while back.
Yes.
Where are we with that? Has that been written off yet?
One part of it was written off in 2018. You will see another portion of it written off in 2019.
How much in 2019?
I can get that number for you.
Renee, do you have it?
I think
The number that we had for that was an estimate. It was in July, because that was based on the age of the receivables, and it was about $240,000 in that area.
For 19?
Decrease the revenues in community service this year. So essentially that's when it will hit our bottom line. I believe that the department's planning on bringing a resolution to
next month yeah.
for 2018's to get the official blessing to use the allowance for doubtful accounts that was set up based on the write-off for 2018.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Mr. Lightfoot?
Yeah, that one does. I've got another one though. It's all right. The Jones Road, the temporary bridges, you didn't include any money for those. I realize that we don't know what it's going to cost, but that is certainly an unanticipated and unbudgeted expense, and as of right now, we don't know. But I think that the highway superintendent, when he presented that last week, it could exceed a couple hundred thousand dollars. Is that accurate? Good.
We'll know that number very shortly with the bids come in. We can share that with you as well at the board meeting.
All right. My point is this, is that you've rattled off a couple, three or four significant numbers of monies that are not there, are not budgeted, that we're going to have to come up with one way or the other. You've identified where the set-asides are. But if you just take a look at the last two that I mentioned, that's probably going to blow that out of the water, isn't it?
It's going to be expensive.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Haggard.
It'll blow it out of the water if the resolution, if we don't get the funding from the projects on Spillman, correct?
If it becomes a county cost.
Okay. And we're also, in the case of the community services, we're now trying to work through a plan to move that down to make it revenue neutral at going forward at some point in time.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And what else?
Me.
Oh, Renee.
Can I just talk a little bit more about the community services numbers? So the adjustment that we did for 2018 was in the ballpark of about $900,000. That's what hit our bottom line. This year will probably be $200,000 to $250,000 for that, but it will not be a spend, so it won't come out of the contingency line. Yes, it will affect our year-end results, our operational results for this year. I just wanted to clear that. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Hager.
When we say fund balance, we're talking about our anticipated contribution to fund balance, not necessarily.
Did you answer that, Ruth?
It will be the year-end results of what we would be putting back into fund balance.
That's correct.
Depending on how the year ends.
Right.
Yes.
So we're talking about our contribution at year-end to fund balance.
As long as we're above zero.
Well, I understand that.
Right.
But I mean, I want to make it clear that what we're talking about here is not taking from the fund balance, it's a contribution to the fund balance. Okay, so let's not be unclear about, we're talking about a situation where we're actually to the good and then adding to fund balance based on a decision and a philosophical view that we've taken a look if that's where we want the money to go. And when we're talking about things like public safety, in the case of Spillman, community services and point of services to people, and some of the other things that we've talked about here that have been taken from contingency going out throughout the year, including the e-books, which goes directly to guaranteeing the franchise, which is an absolute constitutional requirement, not only of this county, but the state and the country. It doesn't seem to me that that's something that necessarily we should look at as a negative. What I'm saying is, this is not because we're not managing our money correctly. It's a matter that we have things coming up. That's why you call them contingencies, and it may mean a little bit less contribution to fund balance. But that doesn't mean we're taking from it necessarily, correct? Thank you.
Mr. Lightfoot.
If we've anticipated and have on the books X number of dollars that we anticipate as revenue and carry that as a positive number in our savings account, our fund balance at the end of the year, and now we have to write it off, that means you're taking that amount out of the receivables, out of what is reported as fund balance. Am I correct or am I off in left field?
I think you can't look at it as a line by line or as a department by department, because it's going to be fund by fund. So while community services may come in over budget because their revenues are too high, it depends on how the budget matches up with reality. But other departments may come in higher. I think that our best guess was probably with budget projections. And there was an add that's projected. So community services may not actually, their department may not contribute to the fund balance this year as an addition, but other departments hopefully will. You have to take it all in
And this is a cleanup of accounts since?
Yeah, and this, I think, was the older than 2017. And the number that we had identified in July, we looked at 2016, 2017, and 2018 and older. We kind of bucketed them. And the biggest was last year. Mm-hmm. Smaller this year for the write-off, and the subsequent year will be much less, too. And I think that's a show that things are improving. And at the departmental level, it's just going to take us a little while to get there.
And all this cleanup did need to occur.
It,
I think it's something that went back.
It was back to 2012.
We can do that.
Yeah.
What those numbers
are.
What
I'd like to see is, obviously, Mr. Hager and I are looking at this a little bit differently.
And I'd like to, I mean, that's the way I am, or that's ingrained in me, is what is fund balance? What is it? What does it consist of? And it consists of receivables, and it's reported as such. If we aren't going to get those receivables, are you telling me that the $900,000 stays in the fund balance, even though we're taking it out?
No, it will really come down to revenues over expenses. But as a whole under fund, under general fund, under one.
Yeah.
So that, like I said, that department may be too low in the revenues, have higher expenses. They would be a negative if they were a standalone, but they're not. So it's not a help. It's not going, instead of 4.2 million, it'll be 4 million.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay, and I don't.
And for years, we haven't been able to make these kinds of cleanups. This is money we're not going to get, and they're trying to move it out of expectation and fund balance. So that gives you a more true number. And if any year coming out of 2018, with the boost of fund balance that the board saw, I think this is the time. And they have the staff that's been able to look at these things carefully and give us numbers that we don't like any of them. But dealing with them cleans the slate and allows these actual numbers that we're trying to work with to be numbers that we can rely on. And that money is coming in against them. And that has been a huge fundamental change at the department level.
Anyone else? Okay, thank you. So we're moving on to committee reports. First up is Mr. Venetia with Cornell Cooperative Extension.
I'll be brief. we have our next board meeting on Tuesday, December 10th at 5:30. And Patrick will be presenting the draft 2020 budget, and I would expect we'll probably endorse it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Denisha. Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Ms. Curran.
Our next meeting is December 19th in Lewis County someplace.
Lewis County something.
Someplace.
No, someplace.
I can't remember what road it's on.
Okay.
Oh, Lowville 812, Dave says.
Okay, thank you. So, Fisheries Advisory Board, Ms. Terminelli.
There has not been another meeting since I updated you last, but we do have a meeting tomorrow night at the BOCES building at 7 o'clock, and I'd like to invite you all to attend. The topic of discussion is, again, going to be the possibility that there is sale and consumption of fish that should not be sold and that have toxins in them and chemicals from downstream that should not be sold. So please join us.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Terminelli. Next up is the Governor Fair Board, Mr. Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board switched its regular meeting, and they met this past Wednesday night. Unfortunately, I had a conflict and I couldn't attend, but I asked them to call me if there was any problems or concerns, and I have heard nothing.
Okay, great. It's good news. Highway and Solid Waste Committee, Mr. Denisha.
Mr. Chambers stole most of my thunder. we had a meeting this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Ms. Arquette, Mr. Lightfoot, Mr. Chambers, Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Legault, Tim Dolly from the Solid Waste Department was there. And we've essentially Mr. Chambers reported on everything that we spoke about, and it was a good meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Nisha. Next up, Industrial Development Agency, Mr. Reagan.
The Industrial Development Agency is currently working on a $1.4 million project over at the Newell Building in Ogdensburg. The building had been abandoned for quite a few years, had some environmental issues, and was deteriorating. Working with the city, they were able to get $1 million from the state, and the IDA is putting up the other $400,000. The hope, the intention is to get the project finished this spring, begin finding tenants in the spring and summer, and move it back into private ownership and back on the tax rolls as both a productive industrial site in St. Lawrence County and as a location that will allow us to attract new businesses, especially Canadian manufacturers, to Ogdensburg and St. Lawrence County. One of the problems that we have is we don't currently have a lot of vacant industrial space that lends itself to light manufacturing and other manufacturing operations. And there were companies that were prepared, Canadian companies that were prepared to move operations there, and ran into the environmental problems, which scared them off. The IDA was able to work with the city to fix those problems, and we're hoping that we'll see some action there over the next year or so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reagan. Recreational Trails Advisory Board, Mr. Marquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The priority right now for Rick, Bill, myself, Deb, and the Trails Advisory Board is the Jones Road bridges. A lot of maintenance has went on from the end of ATV season, moving into snowmobile season, to get the trails all ready and looking good for the groomers. And when we're not doing that, we're praying for snow. Certainly at it from a personal standpoint, because I bought a new snowmobile this year to contribute to this effort, and hopefully there'll be a whole bunch of snow to utilize it in. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution. St. Lawrence RVRDA, Mr. Forsyth.
Yeah, we met 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. We approved a small loan for an Ogdensburg business that's been in business forever, Pepsi-Cola. It was more or less a foot-in-the-door loan. They've never really reached out, but they're transitioning to a next generation, and it was kind of nice to help out. Just updated on a lot of different loans that we have out, all good. Nothing sticks out, so yeah. Moving along.
Thank you, Mr. Forsyth. St. Lawrence County Chamber of Commerce, Ms. Arquette.
I haven't been to a meeting since the last time I reported, but I know that you did ask me previously for information on the Bassmaster, and I think, did everyone get a copy?
Yes. Okay, it's on great. The Google Drive. Yeah.
Okay, great. And Brooke is here tonight, so maybe she could help us elaborate a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you. Soil and Water, Mr. Burke.
We had our last meeting last Thursday night, last meeting of the year. Overall, it was a good year, productive. They had their they had a pickup truck that they put on the market, and the bids are closed, and wasn't quite what they had anticipated, but it was pretty close. There's been some issues with their no-till equipment being brought back in a very poor condition, and I think they were going to contact Steve to see if they could draft a policy for future use that might help prevent that. The other thing was their praise for St. Lawrence County Planning Department, and they wanted to thank Ruth and the board for having chosen Jason and they had great praise for the entire department, not just Jason.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burke. Old and new business, Mr. Forsythe.
As long as Brooke's here, I did have a couple questions off the chamber.
She is coming up.
The fish.
Sorry.
Tournament. Two things kind of stuck out to me, Brooke. One was a golf cart. Did they buy a golf cart for a weekend tournament, or what's that?
No, they rent multiple golf carts to utilize throughout the property, throughout the event for transporting people and materials and all kinds of things.
Any idea how many?
I don't know how many.
I just curious. It seemed like a lot. The other thing was I don't see the county did some help to get you permitted, and there was a bill out, and I don't see that in the expenses. Is that in the expenses, or?
It is not. I checked in with Bill, and there are a couple things that I can update from the P&L that I provided last week. One is he filed it with the permitting paperwork, and so it didn't get over to us. So he's sending that over, and we'll get it processed in the next week. And the other things that aren't on this are a municipal funding from the Village of Waddington for $2,500, as well as Azugachi for $1,000, and the reimbursement for the RVRDA grant of $20,000 has not yet been submitted. He's finalizing the collection of that, and that should go in the next couple weeks.
Okay, I didn't see that either.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Haggard.
Yeah, and just to follow up on Mr. Forsythe's question, you said they'll be sending over to be processed. Does that mean it's going to be paid?
Yes. For RVRDA, they require canceled checks and a number of all the invoices, so we have the file building, and ideally as much as possible goes with that so that they can see the percentage of the total project that they are funding.
I understand that, but that particular information, that the services and so forth, the in-kind services, are provided by the county to cover the permitting so that the Bassmasters could go forward. It was made extremely clear at the time that there was even a question whether or not it was constitutional for us to do that. And we did it, okay, under the assurance that we'd be paid. And so the question is, we're now in going into December, and I think it's a very fair question for Mr. Forsythe. We need to be paid because the board basically took a chance, went behind it, supported it, and we need to be paid.
Yes, and I apologize. I was coming off of the questions about RVRDA being processed. The check to the county will be cut in the next week.
Ms. Curran.
I was just going to answer. There was about 12 golf carts that they had. I mean, I drove one for 3 days. You kind of take people from parking lots over that are handicapped. They bring stuff in for the vendors. Yeah, I think it's about 12 of them they have. They had a couple more than last year.
Any questions concerning Bassmasters? Do you have a report that you want to give concerning that, or are you just here to answer questions, Brooke? Or?
I don't have a full report. I have the financials. I know that a meeting is going to be called with partners to get going on next year. I've been in touch with Bill, and he said he's happy to come with a more full report whenever that's of interest. The only other thing that I wanted to update was that the Bassmaster will be back the next 3 years, and this coming year the host fee goes down a bit, and then the next 2 years it continues to go down. So that is good. It was also included in the Market New York application that we submitted that we should be hearing about in the next month, which included host fees for the Bass Leap for the next 2 years, as well as several other, I think we had 7 or 8 other tournaments included in that application. So that would be tremendous support through that state funding for tournaments across the county.
Mr. Forsyth.
Yeah, well, as I'm thinking about it, the $15,000, now that's gonna sit in this account of this new LLC that they formed. Am I correct in that? Where does that money sit?
The balance on this?
Whatever you're showing as profit.
That is in the Bassmaster account at the chamber.
Okay, so for future chambers, or for future tournaments, that should increase a little bit, hopefully. Some of these are one-time expenses, the legal fees of setting up the LLC and things like that, so those will go away.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of the tournament itself with Bassmaster is going to go down, so contribution-wise, I'm thinking should go down. Because what now Augsburg's got a tournament coming. Mm-hmm. I saw Messina's got another tournament coming. I don't know if we're the tournament sponsors for everyone. I'm going to have to support Augsburg's. I'm going to have to support Messina, the second one. Mm-hmm. I just wonder where we're going to, if we should, when we do this budget, say this is how much we got for fishing tournaments and divvy it out. I don't know what the best way is, but it's going to come down the pipe, I'm sure.
Yeah, certainly, and I think the concentrated effort from the chamber, even before my time, focused on fishing, is coming to fruition with St. Lawrence River being recognized as number one bass fishery, all of these tournaments, the community's really taking on the work of recruiting and making these things happen. And we should hear about the Market New York grant in December, I believe, as part of the CFA announcements, and that will make a big difference if we get that. So then we can regroup after that, if that makes sense.
Mr. Haggard.
Yes, Brooke, where's the permitting process right now for 2020?
I'm not sure. I believe we're trying to set up a meeting with the team.
Okay, the team has to come with a plan to us, I would suggest, as soon as possible, because what we had last time was we're at the last minute, and then it was basically panic whether or not this fishing tournament was going to even take place. We were assured that this would never happen again. As soon as the tournament was over, the permitting process would start right away and being worked on. And now we're getting the team together. I think we really have to start getting the team together and start the permitting process, so we know, even though I understand we're working on funding and you're working on grant processing and so forth, but I think it's absolutely essential that we take a look at that permitting process, because it was made very clear last year that if it happened again, that the county would not be participating in basically pulling the Bassmasters out of the fire with the permitting process. And it's not encouraging that they haven't started that process already.
Mr. Hager makes a good point. Anyone else? Is the chamber being asked to be involved in either the Messina or Augsburg tournaments that are upcoming?
We are in frequent communication with them. Messina has a dedicated staff for it, so we're serving in kind of a support role for marketing in addition to what they're doing. Augsburg, because it's the first time they've done a big event, we're going to be working very closely with them through that process. We just met with them end of last week, and so we're kind of walking through it with them. That's a very different event from the Bassmaster, and all of these have a different format, but the one in Augsburg is quite different, and so it gives a lot of option to Augsburg with what they want to do with it. So we have the tourism event specialist who is funded through the Power Proceeds, so she can dedicate her time fully to supporting these different events however they need the support.
Great. Excellent. Mr. Burke.
The difference between the budget and the actual expenditures, David mentioned the golf carts. It was that alone was over $1,000 more in the expenditure versus the budget. And I mean, I know that there are some things that came in that are less, but typically the budget, you come to us, not you, but this entity comes to us with a budget in hand, and that's what we react to. I'm wondering the deviation between budget and actual expenditures. I mean, I see, and I'm not debating any one of these, but under entertainment, exotic animal show, $5,000. It was in the budget part, the dollar amount was included and actually exceeded the actual expenses, but again, I'm not trying to debate individual items, but it would seem to me that whatever you come to us or this entity comes to us with a budget, we should be able to rely upon that you've done your homework, that you know what golf cart expenses are going to be, and we can react to that. The only point I wanted to make.
Ms. Curran.
I'd also like to see what they put down as what they made in parking. They have a $3,000 budget, but it'd be interesting to see what they put on paper that they made in parking, only because I counted the till a couple.
More questions to be answered. So we'll have to have Ruth organize a meeting and get the players together along with legislators. Okay, we do have a resolution, and this resolution is designating the St. Lawrence County Chamber of Commerce as the 2020 St. Lawrence County Tourism Promotion Agent and designating a project director for the Empire State Development Division of Tourism Matching Funds Program. Moved by Ms. Arquette, second by Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Forsyth, Mr. Reagan, and Ms. Curran. Would you like to speak to that?
This is just an annual resolution that's required as part of our application for New York State matching funds. They added last year that we have to designate a person also. There's a new person in charge at matching funds, and she is quite diligent, which is good, but that was just an addition last year that she wanted to make sure of this year.
Any questions for Ms. Rouse? Seeing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Rita's,
yes, Brooke?
Rita's
good. Oh, I'm sorry, Rita.
I just wanted to say thank you, Brooke, because you've put a lot of hours into this and a lot of feet on the ground over in Waddington to help them and help all this, and thank you. That was a lot of work.
And I look forward to coming back with a full presentation of the 2020 marketing plan and a recap from 2019. A lot of big things coming on, not just events, but other initiatives and projects and opportunities for 2020. So we'll get that scheduled as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we do need a motion going to executive session for negotiations, litigation, personnel, and appointments. Moved by Ms. Curran, second by Mr. Sheridan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. We are now in executive session.